The Detroit Blight Removal Task Force recently found 78,506 buildings in the city are decayed or at risk of becoming so. That is 30% of the city's structures. The price tag to demolish blighted homes and commercial buildings in Detroit neighborhoods, $850 million. And clearing out large industrial sites could cost $1 billion more. Alan Brake is here. Alan's recent editorial in the Architect's newspaper is questioning the wisdom of Detroit's blight removal plan. Hello, Alan.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we welcome Brian Farkas. Brian's with the City of Detroit Building Authority. Brian, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Alan, I want to start with your editorial in the Architect's newspaper. The headline is Motoring Toward Destruction with a question mark. What question are you posing in your piece?
Well, I think no one doubts the sort of scale of Detroit's problems. I mean, it's become a real point of fascination for people around the country and around the world, and I certainly don't dispute that there is tremendous challenges facing the city, tremendous amounts of blight, abandoned structures, and these are major issues that need to be addressed. That being said, I think the scale of the blight removal plan is really startling. The numbers that you mentioned at the beginning of the segment are really startling to consider. So without offering any sort of one single solution, I'm trying to just open up the conversation and maybe suggest that demolition alone is not the solution here.
And Brian, what's your thoughts as far as Alan's view that it sounds like he fears Detroit will risk tearing down its identity and really the foundation of whatever Detroit's revival is to be?
I think in the past, Alan probably was correct. There was a huge focus on demolition and demolition alone. In the last 6 months under this mayor, the focus is on bringing families in and doing a kind of comprehensive approach to blight elimination. And in our view, blight elimination doesn't mean demolition. Demolition is one of the tools we have, and quite frankly, it's the last tool that we want to use. We are much more looking forward to moving families into these houses. In fact, the Detroit Land Bank's auction has already raised over $1.2 million by auctioning off previously vacant houses. So our goal is to lean towards auction before demo and rehab before demo.
Well, Alan, I'm going to ask you this both, but I'll start with you. Where do you draw the distinction between what structures should be preserved and really what needs to be torn down?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a hard call to make sometimes. And just to go back to Brian's point, you know, $850 million is the estimate for you know, demolition. How much of that money could be spent on stabilization? You know, whether that's boarding up windows and, you know, buying tar paper for roofs and, you know, maybe sort of mothballing a lot of these structures and setting them aside for eventual use in, you know, 5 years, 10 years down the line, rather than, you know, clearing out, you know, creating more open land and sort of unused space in what is already a very empty city. And beyond that, I would also point out, you know, beyond just stabilizing buildings, you know, what can be done to stabilize the population of people that currently live in Detroit? You know, there's all these reports about people having their water cut off and people losing their homes because of back taxes. And, you know, how much of that money could be used to help people stabilize their lives and stay in their homes rather than lose them and contribute to creating more blight?
Brian Farkas, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, first of all, right now with the emergency manager situation, the mayor is not over the water department. So I really can't get into that, but I do think Alan raises a lot of great points in that we need to make the neighborhoods livable. And one of the big, I think, selling points of Detroit is the beauty of the housing stock in a lot of areas and the density of that housing stock. So we actually go through kind of a two-prong analysis when we're looking at houses. And as Alan said, it's kind of on a case-by-case basis of, you know, how do you know when a structure has reached the point of no return with scrapping in Detroit? Once a house is vacant, it ultimately becomes scrapped, and then the cost of rehab ultimately outweighs the economic value of the house. So what we do is we look at the structure of the house itself, the kind of systems in place, the roof, the walls, electrical, but we also look at the neighborhood and the street. Because if a house is in a highly dense neighborhood where a lot of the homes are intact, we're going to lean towards auctioning that house off. We don't want to create the first vacant lot in a neighborhood. Now, that being said, in an area where you have a lot of children playing, if there is a vacant house that continually becomes, the boards become ripped off the windows and it's a, you know, nothing good happens in these houses, if there's no viable option for that house, we will probably demolish it.
I'm speaking with Brian Farkas with the City of Detroit Building Authority, and he's joined by Alan Brake, whose recent editorial in the Architect's newspaper questions some of the wisdom of Detroit's blight removal plan as we look about the big challenge of blight that faces Detroit. I'm wondering, what does it take, will it take, to attract investment and development into these neighborhoods where these buildings are? We've seen all kinds of great things happening downtown and midtown with names like Dan Gilbert and Mike Ilitch and so on. But what about into the neighborhoods where these houses that need to either be adopted through the Detroit Land Bank and get new owners or torn down? What do you do with those neighborhoods?
If I could jump in here and take that one.
Yes.
It's a plan that we're already executing to a lot of success. When Mayor Duggan took office, there was a lot of talk of nobody would move to Detroit or buy these houses. And our auction over the last, I think, 3 months has really proved that there is a market and there's a lot of interest in moving into these neighborhoods. So we're doing the auctions, and again, we've already raised over $1 million by selling off previously vacant city-owned properties. And then we're also scaling it up by doing nuisance abatement lawsuits. So privately owned structures that are vacant, we're going after and we're contacting the property owner saying, you got to do something. This house has to be occupied or we're going to come after you in the court of law. Usually we get default judgments, and then we can auction those houses off. The goal is to move people into Detroit. And I think Alan's article doesn't quite oppose the mayor's views. I think what we're doing at in the City of Detroit, at the Building Authority and the Land Bank, are quite similar to Alan's article.
Mm. What do you think, Alan, based on what you're hearing of how the land bank is working?
Yeah, no, I think the land bank is a great step. I mean, it's something that should have obviously been started a long time ago. I'd be curious to hear from Brian just how many houses and properties have been involved in the land bank so far. What scale are we talking here?
As far as under land bank ownership?
Yeah, I mean, you've quoted this $1.2 million figure, I think. How many properties have been involved to raise that figure?
I think about 70 or 80 have been sold already.
Okay.
And again, we're doing these in the areas that already have stability, so we want to kind of work from positions of strength and target an area and not just do the auctions or do the demolitions, but also we've got a very aggressive plan towards turning the streetlights back on. And so what you're seeing is a kind of a holistic approach to quality of life indicators. We've got neighborhood police officers now that work with residents to address other issues. So we're going after every kind of indicator we can very quickly, knowing it's not going to be an overnight success or happen, you know, within a matter of months, but by kind of systematically addressing the blight, whether it's vacant houses that can have families moved into them, houses that are too far gone that need to be removed, turning on streetlights that haven't worked in years. We're going through and relighting the entire city within a year. Every residential neighborhood will be relit within a year.
Another thing I'd be interested to know more about is, so 70 to 80 houses is a great start. I mean, that's a very important kind of kernel, but obviously at the scale that you're talking about of, you know, nearly 80,000 structures, I mean, that's just a sort of drop in the bucket. One of the things that I think is really interesting about what the Blight Removal Task Force did is they've taken this survey, and there's finally a really comprehensive look at where the structures are, what condition they're in. How much have you opened that out to the public to let the public in on that knowledge and maybe looked for creative ideas beyond just demolish or turn it over to the land bank?
Yeah, yeah, the article the technology you're talking about is the Motor City Mapping Project,
yeah,
which did a survey with Detroit residents, hiring Detroit residents over, I think, a three-month period in the winter. That was kind of a first brush across the entire city indicating or surveying every parcel. Now they've kind of turned it to a public-facing tool where there's a publicly available app. It's called Blexting, which stands for Blight Texting. I know it's available on the Android phone, download for free. I think in a couple weeks they're going to have the Apple version up. But it basically allows the community to now input their thoughts and views on this, because at the Detroit Building Authority, where I work, we're scaling up very quickly to handle the construction operations of rebuilding Detroit. What we need more important than ever is the localized intelligence that residents have. And Motor City Mapping enables the residents to very efficiently, very accurately tell us what they think about a building and also if the situation changes. So I know there's been parcel surveys before in the past, but they're kind of snapshots in time that really don't change.
Mm-hmm.
The Motor City Mapping is meant to be a continually updated survey that the residents are the tip of the spear, so to speak, on that.
What do you think of that, Alan?
I think that's tremendous. I think that's exactly the kind of creative thinking that, that Detroit needs to, you know, come up with solutions, bring in new ideas, and hopefully bring in new people and new investment and, you know, turn things around with some of these, you know, very important buildings.
Let me ask both of you, when you look at decaying buildings and vacant lots and look ahead into Detroit's future, what do you see? Do you see a crushing problem or do you see an opportunity?
I think it's an opportunity. I think when you work in these neighborhoods, you really see the resilience of the neighbors that exist. And one thing that I've been struck by in Detroit is the very strong sense of community. A lot of these residents have had to band together because they haven't had much health, and that leads to incredibly vibrant communities. And so we are here to serve those members of the community.
And Alan?
I agree. I think it's a tremendous opportunity. I think it's something that really could attract investment from people around the country. And I again, just sort of urge Detroit to, you know, move quickly, but also maybe really give a chance for that kind of organic growth to happen and for people to reinvest in those communities rather than just clearing lots.
Yeah, one thing I noticed is the article you wrote had the train station as the kind of cover.
Yeah.
Of that, we were excited to see that's privately owned, and the private owner has recently announced he's putting in a freight elevator. I think it's a $2 million investment to assist with the rehabilitation of that structure.
Great. Yeah, I mean, turning that around, I think, would just be tremendous for Detroit's kind of image of itself.
Yeah.
I think everybody who drives by that, sees that, and remembers it from its glory days before it closed in 1988 would say amen to that. Great conversation. We have been talking with Brian Farkas, who's with the City of Detroit Building Authority. And from New York, we were joined by Alan Brake. His recent editorial in the Architect's newspaper is headlined Motoring Toward Destruction. Great to talk to both of you. Thank you so much for speaking with us on Stateside.
Great. Thank you for having us.